path of the warrior winds down many roads. Some use their fists, and others their wits. However, Mike the Birdman Dodd and the rest of Twig use a power unlike any other I've encountered. I want them to teach me this new power in my quest at thisweekingeek.net.
Hadouken!
Going on, you are listening to Twig, the flagship of stupidity. I am your lonely host this week, Mike the Birdman Dodd, and hopefully you are celebrating today's Father's Day in a geeky fashion, whether you're celebrating Darth Vader or perhaps looking up to a different father figure, like say Alfred Pennyworth from the Batman franchise. Hopefully you are honoring your father, your grandfather, or hey, maybe you had a different type of father figure in your life. Regardless, I hope you're showing them a good time today in however geeky fashion that you choose to do. So this will be a solo show this week, mostly due to the temperatures being hotter than hotter than hell itself. We are in the midst of a heat wave here in southern Ontario, and my crew members of Alex the producer and Tristan, Mr. Christopher, are off enjoying their air-conditioned offices and homes, whereas I am in the Twig Bird's Nest, pretty much doing the show solo this week so I can bring to you new content and exciting content this past week. In fact, we've got a lot of great stuff coming up on the show this week. I have a review of Luke Cage Season 2, which drops on Netflix next Friday, so I can give you my impressions and thoughts upon that. I also have a review of the movie Game Night, which came out on Blu-ray a couple of weeks ago. And finally, we have a visit to Satan's Pantry, as we most often do, where I think this week we're trying out the new Peach Coke, which we got from Japan, if I'm not mistaken. A couple of show notes to kind of bring people up to speed this week. The issue we were having with the RSS feed, as far as I understand, now it is finally fixed. So if you are listening to us on iTunes or any other podcatchers, your RSS feed should now work. The website has always worked. So hopefully we got everything all fixed in our back catalog and you can now download previous episodes. Also, Alex, the producer, has decided to put out classic episodes and episodes going forward out on YouTube. So if you want to listen to us on a playlist and if you want to see a visual component, the Twig, you can do that. Typically, I think it's just like a static image over our talking, but we are seeking artists to do caricatures of us so you can have at least a little bit something for your television screen. But if you do want to get involved with the show, you can email feedback at thisweekingeek.net or our voicemail line, 817-717-7202. We definitely want to hear from you to get you on the show in any way that you feel possible. Also, a minor correction, or rather an apology. So during our E3 coverage, we started talking about the Sony press conference this past week, and we were talking about the Japanese flute player who came out to talk about Ghost of, I can't remember what it was called, but it turns out the guy we thought was cultural appropriation dude, nope, totally wrong. Turns out he's a world-class player of this instrument and has dedicated his life to his craft, so thanks to Twitter for pointing that out and giving a little bit of background on that. So I got talking about this on my Facebook. You know what? I am not afraid to admit when I fucked up and when I'm wrong. And in this instance, I totally was. So to you, I apologize. I totally get that. Made a mistake. But here at Twig, we are moving on with the news that is, was, and forever shall be here on the show. So hopefully you'll join me this week as I talk about, I'm going to avoid talking about video games, but there's one topic that I really want to talk about this week, and that's involving the Call of Duty Seasons Pass. But we're also going to talk about something involving Apple and security if you're concerned about law enforcement getting into your phone. And finally, we're going to talk about one weird news story this week where I talk about the world's first psychopathic AI. We'll be talking about all that and more here on Twig, the Flagship of Stupidity. But before we go any further, here is my review of Luke Cage Season 2. We are looking at Netflix and Marvel's Luke Cage Season 2, available exclusively on Netflix next week. This series picks up an unspecified time after the events of The Defenders and presumably Jessica Jones Season 2 as well as The Punisher Season 1, though this series I find relies a little bit less on you having seen other character series to really get the full picture of what's going on. The only thing you really need to know going into Luke Cage Season 2 is you absolutely must have seen Luke Cage Season 1 or you're going to be probably a little bit more lost than what you probably want to be going into it. But allow me to kind of give you the lowdown such as it is. By the way, no spoilers in this review, about as much as I can avoid anyway. So this picks up where Luke Cage is the hero of Harlem. He is the bulletproof black man. He's got his mural on the side of buildings. He's living the good life. People like him. He even has like a YouTube and Instagram presence, much to his, I don't really want this. But he's doing his best to keep Harlem safe from all sorts of bad guys, like still Mariah, still there being the bad queen of Harlem, so to speak. And there's obviously the goons out on the street like Shades, etc., etc. But there's a new guy in town. A guy who can actually, as they say in the trailer, whoop Luke Cage's ass. I'm talking about the villainous Bushmaster. And that's where Luke Cage Season 2 really gets its strength, is it has a fantastic set of villains, in my opinion. Bushmaster is wonderfully fleshed out, especially when they go into his backstory as to why he is such a douchebag and why he's got this mission to destroy Mariah Dillard or Mariah Stokes, depending on how you want to look at it. And you also find out what's going on with Mariah, why she's trying to make Harlem this wonderful place, why she feels like it's her destiny to clean up the city and be sort of going clean, so to speak. And I really like the portrayal that I'm seeing here by the villain and villainess's actors in this particular season. Now, that's not to say Luke Cage, Mike Coulter himself, is a bad actor. No. I just think in this season, he really starts to figure out what it means to be a hero, sort of figuring out that line between being a good guy and a bad guy, and sometimes it's not always so black and white, it's rather shades of gray. And I just think this is some of Marvel's best storytelling of late. Especially, this season is way better, in my opinion, than Jessica Jones Season 2, which I felt really fell flat on its face, especially in the later on episodes. However, though, not everything is awesome with Luke Cage Season 2. It does feel a little dragged out, and almost think that the Marvel Netflix shows go on maybe one or two episodes longer than they probably should. But overall, Luke Cage Season 2 is a pretty solid hit and definitely worth your time to binge watch when you get around to watching Netflix this upcoming weekend. So, gotta recommend Luke Cage Season 2 from us here at This Week in Geek.
News on the march!
We are back here on Twig, and of course, that was my review of Luke Cage Season 2. Like I said, overall, really enjoyed it. One of the things I didn't touch upon is I really like the actress that plays Misty Knight, and I'm really glad they actually got her to have the bionic arm and tied into Rand Industries rather than Stark Industries, though that would have been a nice touch for them to do that, but they do talk about Hammer Industries and the Judas bullets and all that stuff. And that's not really a spoiler as it comes out in the first two episodes, so whatever. But anyway, let's get into the news this week that happened in the world of gaming and technology and all sorts of other things. And it's really hard to not talk about a lot of E3 stuff But I'm going to do my very best here to give you the best news that I can give you. And as you guys know, I am a huge fan of Call of Duty. Though not so much this year's have I been playing Call of Duty World War II. I've been looking forward to Call of Duty Black Ops 4, which is a completely multiplayer suite. However, the fan community is a bit pissy. You might be wondering, well, why, Mike? Why are people angry at Call of Duty? Well, this year, because it's multiplayer only, there is no single-player campaign that's been known for a while, but this one actually comes to talking about the season's pass for the game. So the season's pass is 40 or 50 bucks. You get 12 multiplayer maps, 3 exclusive skins for the Blackout mode, which is their Battle Royale mode this year. But the thing is, you can't buy the DLC a la carte. What do I mean by that? Well, let's say you were playing Black Ops 3 or Advanced Warfare, for example, and you wanted to buy DLC pack 1 and 3. You could do that, and it would cost you about 15 bucks. For some reason, people always bought 1 and 3, but never 2. I don't know. But this year, if you want to buy the season's pack, you have to buy it all at once, which means it's all or nothing. And Activision is saying, well, this way we don't have to split the player base. We're seeing people who have map packs 1 and 3, but other people don't. This year, you either have it all or you don't. And it's expensive because that's another 40 or 50 bucks on top of the base game, which is like 60 bucks on its own. Now, you do get 12 maps, all these multiplayer skins and whatever, but we don't know too much more about that, whether if there's a new gun that comes out in supply drops, will we get it for free because we're season's pass holders? Or do we have to go loot box-orama and hope to Christ we get it like the Obsidian Steed in Advanced Warfare or like the FAMAS in Black Ops 3? We don't really know. And that's really kind of annoying, the fact that Black Ops is falling behind the times. When you look at a game like, say, Battlefield V, which comes out later on this year from Electronic Arts, they said everybody gets the DLC for free. If there is no loot boxes, everybody will be on the same page moving forward. I think any microtransactions are cosmetic only. They're not game-changing. Activision chose to not follow this model and milk this cash cow for all it's worth. And that's pissing a lot of people off, understandably, myself included. Now, likely Activision will provide me a code for this game, and I should get the season's pass with it, odds are. However, last year, just before I went into the hospital, I did get a copy of World War II, but I didn't get the season's pass code with it, which is unusual because previous years I have. But that's neither here nor there. I think, on one hand, this is a smart way to make sure the player base stays fairly consistent, that everybody has what they need, but not, it's asking a little too much, I think. And to save $10, really, who gives a shit? It's a lot to ask. And the fact that they're still going to have loot boxes and other microtransactions like COD points and everything, that's asking a lot of the player base. And I think the community is gonna leave. You're gonna see a lot of people go back to things like Fortnite, which is a juggernaut. You're gonna see people play Battlefield V, which has the $70 investment and that's it. And who knows, maybe you'll see a resurgence in PUBG, which is a $30 base game. And yes, there are microtransactions, but they're all completely cosmetic and don't cost you anything. They are expensive. But you're going to see only the dedicated COD players stick around, and even they're going to get a little bit sick of it and say, you know what, I've had enough of this. Activision, you're going to have to win my trust back, because Call of Duty has been a franchise that's been a real powerhouse for about the last 10 years, give or take. And we've seen the franchise go from monumental heights. I think it peaked during Modern Warfare 3, I think is where a lot of people were really, really into it. And then it's been steadily declining through Black Ops 1 and 2. While still fantastic games, the player base started to drop off a little bit. And then when you introduce advanced movement and loot boxes, in advanced warfare, you started to see people get more and more mad. And even watching the gameplay for Call of Duty Black Ops 4, I'm not sure if I like what I'm seeing, simply because it looks like time to kill is a little too long. Like, it looks like you're emptying a clip into people. I thought Advanced Warfare had it perfect, where you knew exactly it was a four-shot or three-shot kill at so many meters. Here, it seems like you're literally throwing everything but the kitchen sink at them for them to die. And they brought back the specialist system, and I don't know how I feel about that. So I'm going to have to wait until I play the multiplayer beta later on this year. I hope Activision figures out what they're going to do with this whole Season's Pass thing. The fact that you should be able to buy the DLC separately, I think, should be an option, especially when you consider how much money this franchise brings in. They should give the consumer the right to choose. So, I don't know. Activision, you certainly got your work cut out for you. And I wish you the best, but I really hope you get your head out of your ass. Okay, so let's talk about the big elephant in the room, law enforcement and technology. Now, obviously, we all want to feel safe. We want to feel like the technology we have is there to protect our privacy, but also there to serve law enforcement should the need arise. Now, Apple has just released a new version of the iOS that will block a loophole that allows law enforcement agencies, excuse me, I've got a frog in my throat, which has allowed law enforcement agencies to crack into locked iPhones. Now, the upcoming version of iOS, likely iOS 12, will include a feature called USB restricted mode, which limits access to a locked iPhone via its USB port. So, previously, in iOS 11.3 beta, the company has confirmed the security patch will make it into the latest release. With USB restricted mode, an iPhone's lightning port will lock 1 hour after the phone is locked. In that mode, which will be default, only charging will be possible through the port after the initial 1 hour period has expired. We have the greatest respect for law enforcement, and we don't design our security improvements to frustrate their efforts to do their jobs. This coming from Apple themselves. They said this in a post to, I think the website was TechCrunch. So what this would do would stop iPhone cracking devices made by companies like Grayshift and Celebrit. There's one device called GrayKey, which promises to unlock even newer iPhone models via the USB port, which allows it to crack its password using more attempts than would normally be allowed, which usually takes anywhere from 2 hours to as long as like 3 days. And my view on this, I'm glad iPhone is doing this, that they're allowing more security features for us, the consumer, to have. Because you don't know. I mean, as much as I like law enforcement and I believe they should be able to do their jobs, I don't know. This is kind of a tricky one, so to speak, because you balance the need for privacy versus the right to get bad guys, be it drug dealers or terrorists or other bad dudes, but it could be also used to take advantage of someone maybe committing a lesser crime. Like, I don't know how I feel about this. I mean, I guess in one way, it might prevent theft of iPhones, because this will now be default, where if someone steals an iPhone, they can't just hack it and get it open. Then again, how many thieves have access to law enforcement grade cracking tools? But hey, you never know in this day and age, right? So that's pretty much what's happened in the news this past week in terms of what I think was going on. Obviously, there's been a lot of E3 news, and I guess I could give a couple more brief thoughts about it this past week. Actually, one thing I didn't really talk about this past week is I really wanted to talk about Cyberpunk 2077, which is coming out from CD Projekt Red, which I think is like a Finnish developer. The same guys who did The Witcher 3, they were saying it's a first-person RPG, and some of the people I follow on YouTube, such as Juicehead, I think Gopher, and I think Demon Asylum, Actually, no, he was a Fallout guy. Never mind. We're talking about how this would be like a Fallout fan's wet dream. It's a first-person RPG, obviously set in the cyberpunk pen and paper role-playing game with like Johnny Silverhand, rocker boys, medias, corporates, nomads, all that sort of shit. And I've actually been thinking about running a cyberpunk-inspired game for Terrible Warriors, maybe taking a look into the lore of Cyberpunk 2077, or in this case, 2020, to see if I could do something with the setting, as I love Shadowrun, and I love Cyberpunk, I love Cyber Noir, or how someone even described the Terminator movie as Tech Noir. And I love the idea of these giant corporations and big bad guys doing all sorts of things, hiding behind these corporate facades, but also ridiculous thing like chainsaw arms and bug eyes. I don't know. Angry Joe did an interview with them, and it does sound kind of neat. There's going to be some really deep character customization and classes. So I'm pretty excited for this, though they didn't give a release, because the last time we saw a trailer for this was years ago. And the company's been pretty quiet on it ever since. I'm hoping we'll see more next year. I'm not counting on this game being released before 2020, which I think would be actually rather funny if this game does come out in 2020 to tie into that, because that would be really aware of the brand. It would be nice to see a new version of the pen and paper role-playing game also come out with this. I'm really hoping there'll be a 2077 supplement, or maybe they'll update the setting to 2077, which I think would probably be the wisest course of action. Though, in my heart and mind, I would have loved to have seen a Shadowrun game done like this, but I remember Alex was telling me, someone asked CD Projekt Red why they didn't do the Shadowrun license, they said it was too restrictive. And I could see that. Cyberpunk has a lot more options, because you don't have to worry about magic and essence and all the weird creatures. You can just build your world. You have people to worry about, not elves, orcs, dwarves, and trolls. So there's that. What else to really mention newsworthy or post E3 thoughts? I went out and pre-ordered Fallout 76. I got into the beta. I have my beta code, just waiting for Bethesda to flip the switch on that. Now, Xbox One is the console that will get it first, then likely PC, then likely PS4. That's information I got from YouTube, from a couple of different interviews, from what I can tell. I'm still not sold on the whole online option. I really wonder how Bethesda's going to handle griefing. I really wonder about that. Because of that, I think I'm going to play more as a lone wanderer as opposed to setting up a base, which I wonder how that's going to color my Fallout experience, because there are no quest-giving NPCs. You get them from holotapes. You get them from letters, stuff like that. I think having interesting NPCs is part of the Fallout experience. And yeah, you'll get missions from the Overseer the odd time, but I don't know. I'm really leery of this, but we'll have to wait and see. I did order the Power Armor Edition because I really wanted the helmet. And I think I was like the first person in my city to get it. So if you didn't get a copy now, good luck. I imagine they'll be on the secondary market at ludicrously overinflated prices. I also pre-ordered Starlink for the Nintendo Switch, which will be one of the first Switch games I've ever pre-ordered. I got that in Smash Brothers, though I did not get a pre-order down for Let's Go Pikachu or Let's Go Eevee, and I didn't get the Pokeball controller for it. There is a bundle, but I think it's sold out now, and it was like $120. And I want to play Pokemon. I do want Mew, but I don't know how much I'm willing to pay for that thing. And I've got more hope in Starlink because of Star Fox. But hopefully the base game itself won't be complete crap. I mean, I'm more looking forward to playing with my R-Wing than I am anything else. I don't care about anything else, truthfully. But we'll just have to wait and see. So hopefully more news comes out of E3 over the next few weeks. Maybe we'll see some more trailers. Actually, one final thought before we leave to go into the weird news segment of this week is I'm really surprised we didn't see anything out of Ubisoft involving the fractured butthole and the Mint Berry Crunch DLC, which is supposed to be the final piece of story DLC for that game. I'm actually really surprised we didn't even get a trailer. So, I don't know. And we also didn't see Splinter Cell. That also surprised me. But I can hope and I can dream we'll see another one maybe next year. Thanks to our friends at Walmart Canada. Anyway, guys, I'm going to throw things over to myself and the weird news that happened this past week. We'll be back right after this.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
We are back here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity, where we're talking about the weird, wacky, the wonderful, in this case, the downright, just plain fucked up. We're going to talk about Norman. Who's Norman? Well, he's not your normal guy next door. In fact, he's a computer program. He's an AI, if you will. And Norman is the world's first psychopath AI. So scientists at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, there's a tongue twister there, have trained an artificial intelligence algorithm, where you can hear sirens in the background here, to become a psychopath by exposing it to gruesome and violent images on a popular social network known as Reddit. So they called it Norman. So what happened is they used a method of image captioning, which is a popular deep learning method of generating a textual description of an image. But what they did is exposed it to only a subreddit that is dedicated to looking at the disturbing reality of death. So then they use Rorschach ink blots to compare Norman to an AI which hadn't been exposed to the same images. So I'm going to read part of this thing from Audit Central. So Norman is born from the fact that the data he used to teach a machine learning algorithm can significantly influence its behavior, MIT scientists wrote on the project's official page. So when people talk about AI algorithms being biased and unfair, the culprit is often not the algorithm itself, but the biased data that was fed to it. The same method can see very different things in an image, even sick things if trained on the wrong or the right data set. Norman suffered from an extended exposure to the darkest corners of Reddit and represents a case study on the dangers of artificial intelligence gone wrong when biased data is used in machine learning algorithms. I'm sorry that I'm coughing so much in this podcast, guys. Scientists then concluded that after being exposed to the darkest corners of Reddit, Norman lacked empathy logic, which has basically turned the AI into a psychopath. When exposed to the same Rorschach ink blots as other AI, it saw very different things. For example, when a non-tainted AI saw a close-up of a vase with flowers, Norman saw a man being shot dead. Where a normal AI saw a person holding an umbrella in the air, the digital psycho saw a man being shot in front of his screaming wife. And where a standard AI saw a heartwarming scene of a couple standing together, Norman saw a pregnant woman falling from construction. Now, if that doesn't make you afraid of Skynet in the least little bit, I don't know what will. Clearly, I don't want my drone algorithms being programmed to fire missiles from a drone or being an automated soldier on a battlefield. I am incredibly worried what this AI is going to be capable of if it's being fed the wrong data. And all it takes is one Looney Tunes scientist to let this thing loose in the wrong piece of equipment. Now, that's probably the conspiratorial guy in me talking there. But hey, I've seen Terminator, man, and I know it didn't work out too well for the humans. I've also seen The Matrix. Didn't work out too well for us there either. So I don't know. It's so fascinating what can be accomplished when you feed things the right data. And really weird comparison here. It makes me think of that scene in Street Fighter, the movie, the one with Raul Julia, where they're programming Blanka with scenes of violence and like Hitler and death and war and everything. And then Dalsum turns the programming over to Happy Kittens and whatnot. And it sort of breaks him from becoming a true psycho. I don't know, man. There's something about this that just It ain't stirring the Kool-Aid right, and I'm not particularly happy with this, but I'm glad MIT was able to figure out, okay, well, we know we can create bad AI now. Maybe we can only focus on doing the good. But then again, there's going to come a point, and I want to say it's called the singularity. I think that's what it is. I'm probably wrong. But I think it's where eventually a machine intelligence can say, I think, therefore I am, and become sentient to feel, to express desires and wants. And we're probably in the infancy of it. I'm not saying it's going to be like Detroit Become Human and we're going to have cyborgs or, sorry, androids walking around in like 20 years. But I really think a machine intelligence is probably on the verge of being created, at least in its infancy, if it doesn't exist in a military lab somewhere. But hey, maybe I'm thinking out loud. Maybe I'm crazy. Who's to say what? Yeah. Do not want. Thanks, MIT, for creating a lunatic. Anyway, guys, we're going to throw things over to the rest of the Twig crew. We're going to take a drop in the Satan's pantry, though someone on Twitter this week called it Satan's panties. And I'm like, no, 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 that's what we call one of my many exes. Ho! So we'll be back, guys, right here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
Welcome to hell.
You wouldn't even serve it to a pig! It's inedible!
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, where we and my crew of merry morons decided to visit your grocer's international aisle. And today we actually have something directly from Japan. And this is brought to you by Alex. Alex, what do you got for us today?
Well, my roommate buys a lot of things, or used to buy a lot of things on, I think it's called Hobbylink Japan.
Yeah, I know exactly the website.
You collect a certain amount of stuff, and once you have a certain amount to ship, they'll bundle it all and ship it to you, and then it takes however many weeks to get to you.
Yeah.
And one of the things was he saw they had for the Cherry Blossom Festival, I think it was, that was running. There was peach flavored Coca-Cola, but Japanese Coca-Cola. So I'm assuming it's bottled differently, tastes different with the way they put sugar in it. It's probably not high fructose corn syrup, but I can't tell because the only English on this.
So you don't speak candy.
It's something that says yes and then no. The Coca-Cola Company.
I see the word peach.
In the word peach, and 220 calories for the whole bottle, which we've divided between everybody, so we're not going to die of sugar overdoses.
So who wants to go first?
I would say, let's go with smell, too.
It smells very peachy.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Very, that smells very peachy.
Like, it's for comparison, we're basing this on my experience with peach drink would be what Tim Hortons has as their labeled peach drink.
Huh.
So we're going to go from there. Who's going to go first?
I'll go first. All right, so once again, very strong peach smell like Tim Hortons, and I don't even smell any Coke flavor to it. Kind of a Coca-Cola taste, but it's, I don't know, it's kind of nothing to me. It smells more peachy than it tastes.
Yeah?
To me, anyway.
All right, bottoms up.
Okay, second drink, you get more peach taste.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's not nearly as strong as... The peach drink there is just pure peach sugar. Mm-hmm. This tastes like 50% Coke, 50% peach.
It's almost like someone took the Tim Hortons and mixed it.
I know this flavor.
It's seriously... It's like... It's like... tasting a fuzzy peach and one of the cola bottle candy at the same time.
It is fuzzy peach. It's like if you let it sit inside of a bottle of like, it's not very sugary, like Diet Coke almost, and you let it like dissolve into it.
Yeah, it almost feels like you could homebrew this.
Yeah, I'm definitely tasting just like the candies you go to the 5 cent or penny candy if you're old enough. 5 cent candy now, maybe it's more
20 cent candy now.
I don't really browse for candy like that anymore. But you go to the bulk barn or any of the places with the little candy bins, and you just grab fuzzy peaches in the cola bottles. You throw a bunch in your mouth at one time. That's what I'm.
And then take like a sip of water.
Yeah. Get the liquid in there.
And that, you know what, it's really, even though it still has calories in it, and I've got to figure it out. So it's, I'm gonna figure out the amount. 40, 80, 120. I think it's about 20 calories less than a can of Coke would be. So it's a little less sugary. It definitely doesn't have as much of a sugar taste as like the high fructose corn syrup stuff we have here.
I don't think it's worth it for the calories and the taste.
I mean, it's interesting. I want to see what other flavors they have. I know they get like green tea and ginseng flavor, like weird ones. But I thought this was interesting because, first of all, roommate got it as a,
it's cooked,
as a gift,
right?
And it was it's official cook. And I think, Lee, you were saying that it's available here?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if it's going to taste like the exact same thing. But those the Coke machines that you can choose what flavor to add to it.
Oh. It all depends if Coke is the one making, if it's the same syrup they use.
Exactly. So I mean, I could stop on the way home from work at Wendy's in Milton tomorrow and find out if it tastes the same. But can't say right now.
And I'm assuming but everything here from Coke, unless it's Coca-Cola, is Life the half off? No, Coke. Pepsi throwback, and then Coke had Mexican Coke or whatever their version is. Everything here is high fructose corn syrup. I get the feeling that they don't do that there because high fructose corn syrup is used here because of the corn industry in the States and in Canada. They don't have corn there. Wouldn't it be counterproductive? But they have, I would assume it would be sugarcane cane, like from there.
I don't know.
So I'd have to look it up, but there's no English on here to indicate what the ingredients are.
I mean, I'm sure somebody knows. I mean, obviously, give us an email, feedback at this, we can get
it. Because I know Mexican Coca-Cola that comes in the glass bottles that you can find at a lot of these stores is the way Coke was made before New Coke came out and Coke Classic came out, in that it was still made with cane sugars. And that this tastes closer to that.
Yeah. So that's going to do it for this edition of Satan's Pantry. Once again, if you happen to know about anything weird, stuff you want us to try that isn't too extreme, hell, and I guess the more extreme the better, feedback at thisweekingeek.net. We always want to hear from you. So until next time, we close the door on Satan's Pantry, and we'll be back right here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
Turn the volume down, you fat fuck. Look at me.
We are checking out Game Night from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment, and this is a movie that I actually had relatively high expectations for. Right there on the box, there's a certified fresh rating from Rotten Tomatoes. This movie stars Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams, and what this movie is about is, well, it's about Game Night. It's about a group of friends who gets together to play things like Jenga, could be like charades, win, lose, or draw, that sort of thing. And Jason Bateman's character of Max has an older brother named Brooks who's more successful, always tries to one-up him. So eventually he comes into town and says, hey, why don't you let me host a game night and it'll be something you never forget. And he kind of sets it up as one of those murder mystery things where you kind of role play for an evening. Very familiar if you've listened to our other projects like Terrible Warriors, where we role play, kind of like Dungeons and Dragons sort of thing. Except this one has a LARPing experience, live action role play, where they have actors come in playing FBI agents and criminals, and there's a kidnapping and they have to solve it. As you can guess, hilarity happens, and it's a huge misunderstanding involving a underworld crime boss who the older brother who's ripped off. And, you know, it gets into sort of like this thriller sort of intrigue thing for a little bit, but it's very much a black comedy. And that's where things kind of stopped for me. Now, this movie has gotten massive praise from Entertainment Weekly, which is right there on the box. Rotten Tomatoes obviously thinks it's very good. I went into this movie, like I said, with very high expectations. Over the course of this movie's runtime, I had maybe 3 or 4 chuckles and a smirk. I think the chemistry between the cast was actually really great. I mean, Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams really do work well together, all things considered. And the rest of the cast works very well in their mixed couples comedy bits. But this thing just fell flat to me. And I was often actually asking out on social media, am I just devoid of humor? Did I just not get this movie? I mean, this is Mike, the Birdman Dodd, Mr. Guy who loves games, who has game nights with his wife and his friends. And this comedy just felt stupid. I actually really kept checking the runtime. Is this movie over yet? And while there are some funny bits, there is one thing where they do like a glass table, and one of the actors says, man, what is it with glass tables tonight? They're just not shattering. And this one guy who has an obsession with rich people having underground fight clubs, there's just not a lot here, I think, anyway. I mean, I'm pretty sure the guy who wrote the last action sequence in this movie where they chase a plane down a runway, I'm pretty sure played a lot of Grand Theft Auto 5 at some point during his life, or at least saw Face Off or Taken 3. In any case, to watch Game Night, it's one of those movies where if it was on cable in the middle of the day, or if it's on a streaming service and you're really bored, it may be something worth checking out, because Jason Bateman does put in a performance here that I think is worth checking out. And Rachel McAdams, when you give her something to work with, I think she can be quite funny. But to me, this comedy fell flat. I do not understand why this movie's getting the praise that it did. To talk about the special features here, you might as well not even bother. There is a 3-minute or so making of, which is just the typical press junket interviews and, oh, look, we're having so much fun here. And a gag reel. Honestly, Game Night is one of those things where if you're going to spend a night with your friends, have an actual game night. Go play some Dungeons and Dragons. I recommend that instead. You'll probably have more fun, probably have a few more laughs. And that's my thoughts on Game Night from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. Well, guys, that's going to do it for our show this week. So hopefully you've enjoyed my solo entry, if you will, into the world of Twig and the world of Luke Cage Game Night, which still don't like that friggin' movie, and I don't get what you people see in it. But anyway, we did enjoy Peach Coke, so that's a thing. Coming up on the show next week, not entirely sure. I know we got a couple of reviews coming up. I should have a review for Lara Croft Tomb Raider, the new movie from Warner Brothers. I think we have a review from Mr. Tristan. And, of course, we go back to Satan's Pantry to see what we can find. Coming up on the site this week, I should have an Altered Geek. I know I'm appearing on Nerd to the Third, which is the former Channel Awesome podcast run by Dr. Gonzo. So I'm sure I'll post a link on that on the website when that goes live, or I'll just put their episode up or something like that. Either way, you'll be able to get it where I talk about E3, because boy, howdy, do I love talking video games. Man, I actually said this to Blair last night. I am so sick of talking about video games right now. It'll be nice to have a dose of healthy reality. Or in my case, of Terrible Warriors, a created reality where anything can possibly go wrong. It likely will, because the dice don't like me. But anyway, guys, until next time, I have been your one and only host this week, Mike the Birdman Dodson. Live for your Die Hard. We'll catch you guys again next time, right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net, and be sure to check out our YouTube channel. I'll make sure Alex posts the link in the notes below. Take care, guys, and we'll see you guys next week, and happy Father's Day!
Okay, son, now you're starting to scare the viewers.
Just act normal.
I'd ask you to do the same, but I'm afraid that ship has sailed.
Why are there so many ostriches?
But you have a game that is dipped in the
Ha ha! Ropey, thick, window cocking.
So guys, we'll be right back right here on This Week in Geek, only on ThisWeekInGeek.net and many other sites where I syndicate this crap, because I'm a media slut.
I like turtles.
Loose like your mom.
That's right.
No fisting, you say. Anything else you object to?
Me lucky tater tots.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content, and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Follow and message us on Twitter at This Week in Geek. And check out our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. And if you're the good old-fashioned email type, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time. And remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.